Welcome in, latest episode of that SEC podcast with the crazy man, cousin Chris Marler. What's up, buddy?
What's up, buddy? How we doing?
I got a bone to pick with you.
I got a boner to pick, so let's do it. Wait, what happened?
What did you say to Sam Levitt to lie to him to make him pick LSU over Tennessee?
It was all pretty simple. I was like, Sam, you're the hottest person I've ever seen in my life. I'm so sexually attracted to you. Do not clip that. No, so, I mean, what an odd span of events. I honestly think, if I'm being honest, I feel like Kiffin kind of got away with it. I thought it was the best fit for him. I thought going to LSU was the better fit for him,
right,
in what he's able to do. I don't know if he would have been as good of a fit for Tennessee. But like the way that they played this whole thing out, where they were literally at dinner with Levitt at Stabs at one of the restaurants here in Baton Rouge called Stabs, by the way. I'm not going to say anything negative about Stabs. I have a $200 gift card that I need to use still. So I'm not going to talk any trash about Stabs, but my God, what a name. And so it's actually owned by Sharon Moore.
Listen to what Cam said here. Y'all interrupted my hog cranking ceremony.
Hell yeah, Cam.
Crank that hog.
Anyway, don't clip that either. So I thought, like, the way the whole thing went down where he's like, he has Levitt on a visit. And kind of what we were told before that was that whole Liz Frank injury that he has to his foot is a real injury. It's not, there was some speculation from people at Arizona State that it wasn't, that maybe it was something that he just like, he had some issues with the team or with the coach, and he just going to sit out to go to the portal. It's a very real injury. They don't know how, like there's no one that has 100% confidence that he's even going to be back full go by fall. Like they hope he is, but there's not, like, it's a very real injury. And so Kiffin kind of overplaying his hand, going after Damon Williams from Washington, and then having it kind of, you know, come back to bite him with Levitt. I still think that he was the best fit for this offense, or I guess the better way to put it is, I think that LSU was the best fit for his tools and with Kiffin and what can go into developing him to get him ready for the next level. Keep in mind, he's also a guy that has 2 years left. It's not just a 1 year deal. So I think that's a big selling point too. I will say that whatever issues and things that kind of got added to, like the obstacles that got added to this whole thing as it played out, that were Kiffin's fault, did come back to cost them even more money because he lost a lot of leverage, and then they ended up paying for that as well.
Right. Yeah. So it's very convoluted. But one thing I'm not hearing a ton of people talk about, I'm kind of just curious to hear your thoughts, because you could, on the face of it, and I think it would be accurate to say, is Tennessee lost here, right? The recruitment. I don't know what the prices were or anything, but
I do.
At what point do we sit here and develop and play the quarterbacks that we've been recruiting for a couple of years? I mean, George McIntyre was a borderline five-star. This is year two. They're bringing in another guy. I think he was either a five-star or borderline. Now, I get it. It would be less than ideal for a true freshman.
Yeah. But,
I mean, at what point that used to be the way to do it. And I'm not saying maybe it's not. But I think it could hurt Tennessee. If they got Sam Levitt, I don't see how all three of those guys are in the room next year. Does that make sense?
Well, but here's the thing, too. Do you want someone named George McIntyre playing quarterback for you? That guy sounds like the fucking CFO of Johnson & Higgins. That sounds terrible. George McIntyre, how the hell are you? That guy was born 58 years old out of the womb. There was probably a crease, like just pleated things in his umbilical cord when he came out. I think you're right to an extent, but it's hard to do that when there's so much turnover. And it's going to continue to be hard to do that at the quarterback position because you're not going to see – I think you're going to have an overwhelming amount more players enter the portal without wanting to stay and get developed at one school than you will see that stay. It doesn't mean there won't be any that won't stay. Like, Arch Manning is a really good example out of that. Ty Simpson, I mean, everybody at Bama, really. Keelan Russell, Austin Mack. But Austin Mack also did leave Washington to come to Alabama.
DJ Lagway.
DJ Live. But the idea that you have, like, because that's the highest paid position. And one thing that we have not seen corrected yet in the portal is it's a lot like the NFL draft. And I compare a lot of, like, in the NFL draft, you had like the receiver position, especially. And I look at like the Oakland Raiders, sometimes with quarterbacks too, but a lot of times the receivers, it was like, do you remember when the Oakland Raiders drafted Darius Hayward Bay? And yeah. They had his draft like profile and they were like, his hands rated as an F.
He's a receiver. But he's fast as hell.
And he ran a 4.30 and they were like, fuck yeah, but you can't teach speed. And he's out here catching like opposite handed, like just like, he's like anyway. So that whole thing was pretty tough. And so then you talk about now, like, there's always somebody that's desperate enough or dumb enough to pay and overpay for certain players and also certain positions, whether they think it's a project, they think they have a ton of upside, or they just need somebody at that position and there's no one else that's left. In this year, you're seeing a lot of teams that are dumb and desperate and like are willing to overpay. And the thing that hasn't been corrected yet is the amount of money they're spending on these players. Like, it was 2 years ago. It was November 2023 that Matt Rhule said, do you know how much a starting quarterback costs in the portal? It's 1 to 1.5. And we were all like, what in the world? I mean, that's unbelievable. And now you're talking about 2 years later and it's like, the going rate is 5. And I can tell you with certainty that his NIL package at Tennessee versus LSU, they were both upwards of 4.5. I do believe he got over 5 at LSU. Part of that was that he had all the leverage in the world after what happened, but also because that's the going rate. And he's the number one overall player. Like at some point, our psyche is going to turn on this, Mike, and we're going to say, yeah, that's he's worth it. That's the going rate for that position. That's the going rate for that rank. And $5 million is going to become the new normal. And I don't like it. But there's a lot of these players that are garnering a ton of money. Cam Coleman is one we could spend a lot of time on because you had, I think a lot of this has to be looked at through a lens that SEC fans specifically aren't really used to looking through and also aren't very good at it. And that's a lens of like logic and reason, because Cam Coleman goes to Alabama this weekend and is a phenomenal player, a huge, huge player. And I remember Brooks Austin saying he's going to command $3 million in the portal. And I was like, that seems high. Like, he got $1 million last year, like confirmed $1 million last year along with Eric Singleton. His asking price at LSU was $3.5 million. That is what he opened with. Auburn offered him 3.3 and had incentives built into it to reach up to 4 if he was able to have certain stats and all that kind of stuff. So it was like an incentive-based contract. But 3.3 was the beginning, like, or like the floor of it. Do you have any doubt in your mind that Texas, when they got him, paid less than 3.5 or more than 3.5 million?
No doubt.
Yeah. So like, it just, again, it shows you like, it's not illegal. It's not against the rules. This is just where we are in football now. And this is where you're going to start. The frustration for some of these schools should never be like if Kalen DeBoer missed out on Cam Coleman, and I saw a lot of Bama fans were upset about it. If he would have spent $3.5 million on another fucking receiver and not an offensive lineman, I would have lost my shit. Like that's a crazy thing to do. But in this scenario, there are teams, like I said, that are either desperate, maybe not dumb is the right answer, because I think Coleman's a phenomenal player. That's a ton of money to throw out to a guy that has less than 100 receptions and right around 1,300 yards in 2 years of production.
Right. But to go back to what I was getting at before you
ramble. Move on.
I don't know how sustainable is it to every year be going to the portal, particularly for a quarterback. And now it's working for Indiana and Miami and Oregon. I mean, these are the teams that are in the Final Four. So maybe that, but again, you're bidding against them every year. And if you're Josh Heupel, if you're Lane Kiffin, if you're Steve Sarkisian, I don't think that's what you should have to do. Does that make sense? Like you want to be bringing in touted high school guys, and then by their second year on campus, they should be ready to play. Hendon Hooker, year two. Nico, year two. Now, he was not that good, but the team went to the playoff. I mean, if you're Mark Stoops, it's a completely different story.
I want to stop you for 1 second. So I say this all the time, Mike. If we're going to talk about sports and college football specifically, we're going to do it with factual information. So I see here that OltGamer94 says, this dude whines more about NIL and other colleges than my one years old cries for a milk bottle, dude sucks. Let me just go ahead and explain something as calmly as I can, okay? This will be our first outburst of the day. What I'm doing is telling you factual information about the money being offered. I don't give a shit if these kids are getting paid $4, $5, $10 million. Good for them. No one's complaining about it. What I'm doing is telling you information that you clearly didn't know before you turned on this fucking show and then found a way to be upset about it. I say, if you want to be upset about a lot of things, be upset about politics, be upset about your fucking looks, be upset about your credit score. I don't know what else. Don't be upset about fucking numbers, bro. Don't be upset about numbers. There you go.
Well, hey, that's a good transition.
Sick? You're still sick, dude? You're still suck? God damn, what an awesome typo. You're still sick, bro. Fucking right, dude. I appreciate it. Good Lord. Hey, man, this I heard this player got $10 million. Wow, we got to start complaining about everything. What? How bad are you at fucking listening and reading comprehension?
Yeah, don't answer that. But what about Texas getting Cam Coleman, Hollywood Smothers? Now the rumor is they're trying to get this offensive tackle Seton from Colorado.
Oh, man.
For about $3 million. Is Texas preseason number one for sure? Are they going to win it all?
So I am way more bought into Texas this year than I was last year. Like, and part of that's because we had to see Arch Manning play and like go into a season where he is going to like prove himself and go up against actual defenses and not, you know, in garbage time against certain teams. Like all of the stuff that we heard preseason, it did not come to fruition early on when he first came out. He looks bad against Ohio State. I'm on board with it now. I hate myself for it. I'm not all in on it. I am on board with it now, though. He looks fantastic at times this year, especially late in the year. I thought he looked great in that bowl game. Now I will say, I'll push back on the idea that like, oh my God, Texas is getting an Avengers level like offense put together. Like, where I will push back, and this is not a negative thing about Texas for anyone that might be confused about me saying words that are just information based. The thing with Texas is it's not like they've ever been short on talent before. Like the idea that they're already coming out and saying like, oh my God, like they got Hollywood Smothers, which I would say 90% of SEC fans didn't fucking know who that was before the portal opened. And then they got Cam Coleman, who is a very talented receiver. They lost everyone at the receiver position and at the running back position. The offensive line was a big issue. And I think the idea that all of a sudden, oh my God, they have a great portal class, which means they're going to be the best team in the country. It wasn't like they were short on talent in any of these past years. They got a new defensive coordinator. Sark is still calling plays. And I think that like they should be, I would probably have them, depending on how everything else shakes out, because there's still multiple days left in the portal and there's a lot to still know who's coming back for next year with the NFL draft decision day coming in on the 15th. Like, there's still a lot of dominoes that have to fall. I think they're probably a top five team. I guarantee they're a top 10 team. But the idea that just because they've had a great portal class means that they're going to win the national title, it's like I don't see the – it's not like it's some huge step up in talent. It's a great, great class, and it's a really good roster. I fully believe in Sark, but I'm not going to sit here and crown them in January when they've had as much or even more talent on 2023 and in 2024 and still came up short.
Yeah, and maybe this is not fair because I really need to do a deep dive on all these rosters because they're so in transition. It's kind of hard to have a full grasp right now of just the rosters for everybody. Mm-hmm. But I have heard Texas people say, you know, because they've lost a shit ton of guys.
Shit ton.
That they are focusing more on what's it from? Quality over quantity. But yeah. In this playoff structure, can you afford to do that? Because you're gonna have to win multiple games. I mean, it's almost like a war of attrition. Is that a smart way to go about it, you think?
Well, I think they should throw whatever they can get at Seton. I think one of the biggest things we saw them take a step back on, and it's something that no one seemed to want to talk about, was like, what is the cliche, Mike? Games in this conference especially are won and lost where?
On the line of scrimmage.
There you go. I was going to say in the trenches because I'm fucking sick, and that sounds cool as shit, dude. But like they are one in Lost in the Trenches. I think they lost four offensive linemen the year before. They had a top 10 pick in Kelvin Banks Jr. He goes to New Orleans Saints. That was their left tackle. I mean, they lost a lot of people on both the offensive line and then also the defensive line. They had, I mean, that defense in 2024 was so overlooked because of how good the offense was. And it was one of the best defenses in the country. Like they were awesome. So I think it'll be interesting to see what they look like up front on both sides of the ball, because that was a real key from 2023 and 2024. I will also say I trust Sark a lot. I think one of the things he brought up when he first got there was trying to turn around this roster, because everyone just assumes it's Texas. They're going to compete right away and they're going to be great because it's, you know, everyone 4 and 5 starts in their backyard everywhere, blah, blah, blah. The thing with Texas, though, when he got there, I remember him saying there were 18 receivers on that roster, his first roster. There were 8 offensive linemen. I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? Like, why would that be a thing? And I don't think he's going back to that at all. He has proven he knows how to build a quality roster with depth and with talent and all those things. I think that the way that we're talking about Texas this year, like I said, is way more fair than it was last year. Because I think we see what Arch can be now. He has another year where he's a starter, and he has as many weapons, if not more, or I mean, whatever you want to make that argument with, around him. The big question for me is how do they look defensively overall, because with a new DC, and also in the trenches? And I think that's a fair question to ask, while also saying, yeah, I think the hype could be real going into this offseason. And also, somebody made a really good point. They don't play Georgia.
I thought you meant this was the good point.
Marler built like a butt plug. just this.
Have you heard from anybody that covers Georgia or knows it well about how they feel about Muschamp going to Texas?
It was kind of surprising. It all seemed like it was a pretty good situation for them. Was he involved this past year?
No. Not really.
Okay. But what was interesting was like he seemed happy. I mean, Muschamp went to Georgia.
Right.
His son was at Vandy, so he was able, it was like a quick drive, and like by all means he seemed pretty happy with his spot. This is his 7th SEC school that he's gonna coach. 7th.
I mean, trying to hit them all, you know?
Yeah. He is it's wild. But I think that he is probably still a good – he's still a good recruiter no matter what. I have no concerns over that. I do wonder if some of these guys – and this is an unfair example or comparison. But, like, we saw it with Jimbo Fisher a lot where it's like, hey, Jimbo Fisher was a good offensive coordinator in the 2000s. Jimbo Fisher had a fucking Cheesecake Factory menu with, like, 18 pages on it going into 2023. And he was like, none of it worked. None of it worked. And so it's like, you know, I don't know if Muschamp is in that category. I think he's obviously still a good coach. If Kirby Smart trusts him, I would trust him. But this is a much different role than, hey, I'm a defensive analyst. I'm helping out. I'm doing this, and I have no stress on me. So I don't know. I think everyone was surprised because it kind of just felt like he was kind of enjoying where he was at in life. It's not like he needs money. And you know, and now he's going to one of the biggest schools in the country where he was originally supposed to be the head coach in waiting.
You know, what's the most confounding thing about Jimbo and that damn Waffle House play sheet?
No.
The man apparently has a photographic memory. Have you seen the videos of these where they go?
I love that.
They'll go to Jimbo and be like, all right, 2014, Florida State, third quarter, coming out the half, Georgia Tech. What'd you run? First play. And he's like,
92, waggle, yeah, back in.
Bootleg, Winston hit old Travaris there for 22 yards. Like, he knows, how the fuck does he know that? Yet he needs this giant menu. I don't know.
Dude, you know who's really, if you like that, you should watch the Sean McVay ones. Because those were all, the ones I saw with Jimbo were all like, big moments. It was like, all right, it was a go-ahead touchdown against Boston College. And he's like, oh, yeah, that was blah, blah, blah. They'll ask Sean McVay. They were like, all right, 2008, second quarter, 9:38 left against it's like week 7 against the Browns. And he's like, ah, that was a trip. Trips right, bootleg left. And you're like, what the fuck, dude? Like, that's incredible.
We call that a Marler mind right there.
That's right. I remember a lot of stuff. I don't.
But do you remember South Carolina whooping some ass? Speaking of line of scrimmage in the portal, what about your Cox? Are you feeling locked on?
I'm so excited to talk about this because I'm literally posting an article right now that I just wrote about, and so the thing with South Carolina getting Jacarius Peake is such a massive deal, and this is for a number of reasons, and I'll start there, and then I'll tell you what I think the real storyline here is with South Carolina that no one's talking enough about. Okay, so I think that with Jacarius Peake, it is the number one offensive tackle. It's number two because of Seton entering the portal, but it's a top seven overall player, top 10 overall in the portal, right? And for the first week and a half, whatever, he was the number one target. Now, South Carolina is one of many teams that around the SEC that lost like a ton of talent at specific position units. So like Texas got gutted at running back, LSU, Alabama, South Carolina all got gutted at the offensive line position. There's a couple others. I think the secondary, I want to say in Oklahoma, that had a bunch of people leave as well. There's just like, there's been a few different places that have had at certain position units, like complete turnover, right? Like where you've lost almost everyone. Alabama has more money and deeper pockets, more prestige to play in the playoff, all that kind of stuff. And as big of, if not more of a need for an offensive tackle. And they were in the hunt for Jacarius Peake as well. And the fact that South Carolina was able to get him is so big because it shows that like what Beamer is building, I think, at South Carolina. And a lot of people can talk shit about it outside of those four walls and talk about how you know they how disappointed they were when they went 4-8 and they're overrated and Beamer sucks and blah blah blah. You can have all those takes about like what happened in the season. No one has won the offseason more than Shane Beamer. And that includes Lane Kiffin, that includes Pete Golding. I understand what Pete Golding did on the field. But with what was up against Beamer and what we all expected out of Beamer, I think anybody here would have said, yeah, Ole Miss is going to beat Tulane. Of course they're going to beat Tulane. Maybe not Georgia, but like we expected that out of Golding. I love to see what he's done with like the retention there. But every single thing that has happened, like in the box that had to be checked for Shane Beamer this offseason, he has checked and he has won on every single one of them. Even the few hiccups that have happened that you didn't expect to happen. Like losing Sterling Lucas to LSU, he had an answer for it immediately. And part of that was also, hey, you're also not going to take Dylan Stewart. The thing that I think he has done better than anyone that no one seems to be talking about, and again, I talk about looking at the portal through a different lens. We talk so much about like acquiring talent. It is so important for players or for coaches in this day and age to acquire talent. It's all about the Jimmys and Joes, not the X's and O's, blah, blah, blah. But acquiring talent from the portal, whether it be elite talent or just like overlooked and talent that you're going to develop later and they're going to be key players for you that maybe aren't four or five star recruits. That's also very, very important. We saw it with Kyle Kennard. We've seen it happen several times with South Carolina specifically, and they've done a good job at it. But I want you to think about this, Mike. South Carolina has the 19th ranked class in the portal right now on 247 Sports. What does that look like? If you're telling me a team that's like in the entire offseason where you're talking about all the players available, if you say they got the number one offensive tackle in the country, how are we talking about South Carolina? If I change the framing of that and say, hey, by the way, because I talked to Clark Brooks from On3, who does all the evaluations and player rankings for their transfer portal stuff on On3. His response to me was that Dylan Stewart would be the number one edge rusher in the portal and a top five player. Lenora Sellers would be a top 2 to 3 player overall, probably right behind Sam Levitt. So if I'm telling you that they got Jacarius Peake, that's huge already. If I'm also telling you, hey, they got the number one offensive tackle, they got the number two quarterback and the number one edge rusher. They got three guys that were all ranked inside the top 10. We're talking about South Carolina in a completely different light. And so the retention that South Carolina has been able to have this offseason, I think is one of the biggest stories we're not talking about in the SEC. That was so long-winded.
Right. And the coaching moves, hopefully we'll get more out of those guys. And I think they will.
Yeah.
Hey, you went over Ultra Gamer. Shane, I kind of like this guy now that his response to the butt plug. He's not that bad. There you go. It usually takes months to years for people to warm up to you. You got that guy at about 20 minutes.
Got him.
You know who didn't get him, though, Marler? Bama.
Yeah.
Is Bama cooked? Can they compete in this era? I'm hearing private equity. That's the solution now for Bama. They can't compete with these billionaires for players.
Yeah.
Is it over for the Tide?
Why would it be over? What happened? Because they lost Hollywood Smothers?
You just referenced that. You referenced Pete, the left tackle. I mean, they can't get anybody. They can't. Did Cam Coleman even consider their offer?
Why the fuck would they want Cam Coleman? Like, listen.
They couldn't pay Ty Simpson. That's why he's gone.
Dude, first off, him getting $6.5 million offered from Miami is insane. I don't think that they're cooked at all. I think the big thing is, like, listen, I wish they had a better portal. They've had a real big roller coaster here because it's like they were 23rd on Saturday. They lose Smothers, and then they drop to 59, worse than the SEC. Then they go get somebody else. Live. Actually, that's pretty good. Anyway, man. So here's the thing. I think just having a nice 30-minute sit down pee with you guys. I think that they have had this like roller coaster, and I will go to my grave saying this. I don't think it's even up for debate. Like people just talk about Alabama differently than anyone else. Like they are held to a different standard. There's a reason why that we talked so heavily about their losses and not the fact that they won against Georgia in the regular season, which was, again, the most impressive win of anybody going into the playoff on the road at Georgia. The fact that, DeBoer's going to leave for Michigan, that was never going to happen. People over here in Baton Rouge, you know, some that I'm friends with or close to, talking about how there's they lost four games and back-to-back years, like, you know, the fan base is mad. And it's like, outside of Feinbaum fans, no one is mad about that. Like, they won 11 games. They went to the playoff. They won a playoff game in year two. Like, the idea that they can't compete in the portal, sure. Like, maybe I wish they would have gotten peak or like, for them, I guess. Like, I'm really happy it's South Carolina, to be honest. They still got Ty Haywood, a former five-star that was committed to them a year ago out of high school. They got who was it? They got the three guys. I think it was like yesterday that kind of bumped up their class. But here's the thing too, man. They just signed the number two overall ranked recruiting class in the country. They also signed, like, I think the number one class the year before, or top three class. So in 2 years, all the shit we talked about with Kalen DeBoer, like all the stuff that was like, he's never going to be able to recruit. He's not going to get it. He can't win big games. He has the best record of any fucking coach in the country against top 25 opponents. The best, like the best. Fully aware of what happened in the SEC championship game, fully aware of what happened against Indiana. Indiana is a juggernaut. But the best record against top 25 opponents, so he's great in big games. He's also recruited arguably better than any other coach in the SEC over the last two seasons because he's finished with a top three class both years. Yes, they do not have the money to go compete with some of these teams in the portal. They have so much fucking talent coming in. And at the running back position, like, maybe Smothers is great. You also have Kevin Riley. You got Daniel Hill. You got that Crowell kid, the five-star freshman. And then from the receiver position, they need to go out and get at least one more body. I was kind of shocked that Isaiah Horton went out because he was already getting paid $700,000 from Alabama a year ago. I'm assuming he got over $1 million this year. But, like, you got Lottie Brooks. You got Ryan Williams. You got Sed Morgan or Sed, what's his name, coming in from, who's a five-star recruit from last year's class. Like, you have talent everywhere. They just need to figure out ways to be more consistent. And I tell you what, like up front, they couldn't run the ball on fucking anybody. It can't get worse.
It can always get worse, Chris. Trust me. It can always get worse. How about A&M? Have you been impressed with anything they're doing? They got your guy Isaiah Horton there. I mean, I thought he was.
Somebody said, despite those stats, DeBoering wasn't in the CFP. I have a serious question. And I like him. I like Liquid Flames. But how fucking dumb do we have to be? You just proved my entire point that we talk about this team differently than anyone else. Not only were they in the CFP, they won a CFP game. they won. They played in two. They played in the fucking Rose Bowl like a week and a half ago. Like, do you see what I'm saying? Does everyone see what I'm saying now? We talk about them differently than everyone. They got their ass kicked by Georgia. They also beat Georgia.
I think if you lose by 35 or more in the playoff, you technically weren't there.
Emotionally, I checked out early on in that game. I'll tell you that.
So A&M, according to On3, A&M's got the number two portal class in the country.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they got a ton of guys that are. Well, they got Fromby from Bama. They got Ricky. You always ask about Ricky Gibson, them corners at Tennessee. Yeah, they got him. So they got a lot of depth. They got a kicker finally. Anything stand out to you about A&M, who, again, according to On Three, for whatever that's worth, the best portal class in the SEC and only behind Texas Tech and their billionaire owner?
What's the question? I wasn't listening.
Just anything impress you from A&M's portal haul?
Yeah, I think I want to say they're one of a few teams. I want to say it's only three or maybe it's even two teams in the SEC, at least from the first week of the portal, that had more players retained or the same amount than lost, which is like, I mean, that is right. A net negative every single year for almost every single team.
They got 18 transfers in, 14 transfers out.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've had a really, really good class. I think one of the biggest things for them was getting Craver to come back, for one, getting Reed to come back, and then going out and finding, like what seemed to work best for them this year, Mike, was something we hadn't seen in a while for them. And it wasn't just Manziel to Mike Evans. It was, all right, we have a good quarterback, and we have two receivers. Like, we have two receivers that are very, very good, and it's hard to take one side of the field away when you have another guy that's as good as Craver or Concepcion, and they were both very good this year. Damn it, Liquid Flames. Damn it. So, whatever. So, I think getting Isaiah Horton, and Horton's a big dude. He's 6'4". He's a big target. He was very big for Alabama in some of their biggest games. I think that is something that A&M desperately kind of needs, is a guy that they know they can go to in those big moments. Because that is not digging at A&M, but that is still a new thing for this program, is being on the biggest stage and being able to win there. And Isaiah Horton's a guy that had multiple touchdowns against Georgia in that first game. It's a guy that had three touchdowns in the Iron Bowl. He is a big target, and I think he's going to be very, very good for them. I think that getting Cam Coleman would have been awesome. I think that if you lose out on him, again, this is something that can be a blessing in disguise for a lot of these teams, because it's like, if you lose out on a guy that's $3.5 million, I would imagine Horton is probably a $1 million acquisition. So that gives you $2.5 million more to go play elsewhere in the portal and sign the key guys. But the other part of it too is what I just praised from Shane Beamer and some with Lane Kiffin, of like the retainment, some of these key players they've retained. Marcel Reed would have been probably a top 20 player in the portal. I'm assuming Mario Craver would have been one of the highest ranked receivers. Like, keeping that core nucleus from this year's team in play for next year is also huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with that. How about Florida? If you want to talk retention, they've been keeping a lot of key guys and also attacking the portal, bringing in some big-time players. The one they got Singleton from Auburn. He's a big name. They lost DJ Lagway, according to Chris. That's the biggest probably addition by subtraction in the country, because he's hated Lagway since day one, but he was kind of vindicated.
I was right.
Kind of. We got
drinks one beer and says he's with. I am. What the fuck are you talking about? I'm drunk right now. So this is another trend that we've seen. And I tell you what, I hate covering the portal, because it's one thing after another, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of been fascinating to watch some of the trends, though, that have happened. And I think one of them I jokingly put out this tweet last night about Auburn, how this is like Auburn's new logo, and I replaced the U's in Auburn with the USF logo.
We're calling them.
They have copy and pasted the USF logo, or the USF roster. But here's the thing, man. Like, look for a blueprint that works and copy that. They always say the NFL is a copycat league. It's kind of similar to what's going on in college football as well. And you think about what Indiana's been able to do. Indiana, when Cignetti first got there, he was at JMU, and he took, I think, 13 players from JMU, brought them over to Indiana. They've had tremendous success, obviously. And then what he started doing from there is saying, all right, how much money do we have? I'm going to go get a key quarterback. I'm going to get a good running back, and then figure out some other key spots in the offensive line of what we need to go win games. And they've done it. But it started with that copy and paste from this roster to this. You see it with USF and Auburn. I think that's going to work really well there. They also look, that's very similar to Indiana, because they have an elite quarterback now with Byron Brown. You've also seen it elsewhere. Like LSU and Ole Miss have just been this constant bartering for goods back and forth with some of each other's players. And then the other, Kentucky has done a great job getting a ton of SEC talent that has come with them. They have one of the best classes in the country, and not enough people are talking about them yet. But with Florida specifically, I wish that Lagway was there. I'd feel better about their chances if he was there, because he'd be going into year three. Maybe it's a more quarterback-friendly offense. I don't know. But getting Singleton and getting some of these other players, but especially Singleton, and you've already retained two of your best receivers in Vernell Brown, and I think, was it Eugene Wilson, or is it the other one?
No, Trey Wilson definitely gone. But I think Vernell's Dallas back Wilson. For Florida.
Wasn't there two Wilsons?
Trey Wilson, he's back.
Yeah. So him and then having Singleton, like, keep in mind, Singleton was a top five player overall in the portal a year ago. Didn't have the greatest season for Auburn, but he was a top five player a year ago. He's still a top receiver in this portal cycle as well. I want to say he's a top 30 overall guy. That is a weapon that we have seen used in this offense. So I think that, like, the familiarity with the system, I will bet you that there are few players in the conference and maybe the country that are happier to be making a change than Eric Singleton going back to a Buster Faulkner offense. Because one, Buster Faulkner is a Parkview High School graduate, and a lot of us are geniuses and elite athletes. I think we all know that. The other thing is, you go from Buster Faulkner, one of the most creative minds in the world, to a fucking sun-dried prune that is living off what he did in 2015 in Hugh Freeze. And now you're going back to Buster Faulkner with even more weapons around him. I think he's going to be really, really big in this offense. And he's also somebody that can help all the younger guys, because he's not only a veteran, but he's familiar with the offense, so he can get everyone else on the same page.
Yeah, and I'm glad you referenced Kentucky, because I wanted to give them a shout out. Do you think it helps that their basketball program's in the toilet? And they're saying, hey, let's get back to football where it really matters.
But oh, man.
they have loaded up, though, on the line of scrimmage.
Dude.
That's where they've been weakest. They're getting all kinds of talent, including Tennessee's left tackle, which I'm sure that's gonna go over well on old Rocky Top. But I'm loving the moves from Will Stein,
former five star. I think, and they got CJ Baxter. They got a few key guys from Texas. They got a guy from Bama. They might have, like, that was one of the most impressive parts of what they've done, is because they've put together a really solid class where they get. I guess we could start it this week. We'll start doing that this week. SC basketball power rankings. They got to be better than your fucking head coach rankings I saw you put out. Jesus Christ.
Oh, I'm waiting for, I'm going to say those to the end.
But I think that, I think that what they've been able to do, especially in year one, like if you were looking for, if you're an Oregon fan, you were looking for any excuse to give yourself as to what went wrong in the fucking Peach Bowl, it might've been that he was 1 foot out the door and putting together this incredible class, because Will Stein has knocked out of the park. Now, I will tell you this. This is not a dig, just so everyone knows. I know we have to protect people's feelings. I'm not being mean. Where the fuck are they getting this money from? Because that was good. Wait, what? When do we get Marlowe's Old Navy? It's like a $200 vest. Fuck off. What?
That's so sad. You know the price of your vest so you can quote it to people.
I don't want to sound fucking sick, bro. Allie got it from Belk. I fucking love Belk.
Oh, we could
anyway,
do it.
Well, everyone loves Old Navy. The performance fleece, iconic. Anyway, I think that there's another one. Another
They're
what?
Counting every time you touch your glasses.
Oh, yeah. Fuck. So, all right, here's the deal. Let's just get a real conversation going right now. What was the question? Will Stein, what they've been able to do, I think it's also important to, like, did it again. If there are pieces you're getting in place from the G6 level.
Look at what Davis said.
That is not that far. I'm really entering into my, hold on. What the fuck is wrong with Emily today? So take a drink every time he touches his glasses. I'm going to drop my balls on the camera. How about that? Anyway, so I think that when you get all these pieces that are from Power Four and SEC schools, like I could be wrong about this, and I probably am, but it feels like every single one of Oklahoma's 25 guys have gone to an SEC school. Like, they have done a tremendous job. Yeah. Is this because I look at him in an Ole Miss frat? 200 best up top. What is wrong with you guys? B. MacIver got it. Yeah, drop you on nuts. The typos are the best today. That is incredible.
Anyway, it's hard to type from your phone, I would imagine, you know.
Are they on their phone?
Most people probably are.
He hasn't saved bitch, when have I ever been focused? What are you talking? Is this your first time watching the show? He hasn't been focused for like 20 minutes. No, we're talking about Kentucky football, Davis. Why don't you give me a fucking break?
All right. Hey, any other portal updates, or would you like to transition to these awesome coach rankings?
I don't want to talk about transitioning at all. Not with the political climate we're currently in. Let's talk about Minnesota just for a second. Let's see how the comments go in Minnesota.
Uh-oh.
So here's my thing about the portal and Somalian fraud and what I think should happen.
All right. No wonder the
Minnesota
comedy.
Gophers, Minnesota should be so much better in the portal. If there's that much Somalian fraud happening in these daycares, they should definitely be funding their NIL.
They should. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, yeah, Mississippi State's got a chance to get them back week two at Minnesota. Oh, buddy.
No, I hope that Mississippi State's social team does like a reference, like a throwback to the fraud in the game post afterwards, like fraud. Anyway, you think this shit's easy, Marla? Give your head a shake, bud. What did I do? That's fair. All right, let's move on.
All right, coach rankings here.
You changed it.
No. See, I think this is confusing. See, this has my face at the top. This is my rankings.
Who had Lane Kiffin at one?
This is Shane's ranking. See Shane up there.
Well, that is fucking astounding to have Lane Kiffin at one. Eli Drinkwitz at three. Are you fucking kidding me, dude? This is why.
Even Peter Burns has called this clickbait.
He said that's bait. I saw that.
There was nothing to click though.
He didn't say click. He just said that's bait.
Okay.
You dumb bitch.
Who are we baiting?
I don't know. This is pretty bad. Go back to why is he like drink what's at three is fucking.
But this one's better, right? This is my rankings.
Yes, that is better.
Biggest omission here.
Elko at eight is kind of tough. Clark Lee at 10 is surprising. I don't disagree with it, though. Now, Pete Golding at 14, I think that's kind of fair, but I also am surprised because it's
I didn't give him a lot of points because he's just barely been a head coach.
No,
you know what I mean?
Fair. Yeah, I think that's fair. Hold on. I love that Emily is sitting here coming to your fence saying it's a list, it's not a prophecy. Like the amount of things that we get mad about that I say – and you put out a fucking list with your cousin saying that Lane Kiffin is a better coach than Kirby Smart when he has lost to them. How many Lane Kiffin is what's his record against Kirby Smart?
I think he's like 10-0.
Yeah. It's not good, man. I tell you that. The only thing I think Kalen DeBoer deserves to be up where he is. I love Heupel. I think that's a really good pick as well. I would probably have him below Sarkisian. Just because Sark has reached the playoff two times, there's also a case we made for what Heupel's been able to do with the talent he's had in comparison.
Right.
I saw the other one that you listed with Shane, and it said that picture is fucking
this Frodo one.
No, yours on this picture. That is like the most like 1997, like today's best hits. I could see the argument to have Venables over Kalen DeBoer. I could see that. I don't know if I would agree with it, but I could see that happening. I don't have a lot of issues with yours right here. I mean, there's a couple that surprised me, but I think they surprised me because you got them right and not wrong, which is not usually the case because you're a fucking idiot. So there's that.
Steve Sarkisian, ninth play caller, though, if in my opinion.
I will never get over that. I will. I want to know who else was on there because you know they had to have a lot of those guys fired by now.
No, they're all elite now.
Yeah.
They're
just
better.
It was just Todd Monken eight times.
They've been to the playoff three times, most of those guys.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't have that big of an issue with some of that. I think that like I think you really need to have a reshaping of what we talk, like how we talk about the best coaches, because Dan Lanning has been given a fucking free pass for a lot of stuff. And I think he's a good coach. I think he's a really good coach. But like falling short of getting to the national title 1 year when they're undefeated and they get their number one overall seed, a year later, they have a good, I mean, like, it's not like Dan Lanning is ever going to not have talent. He was also in the Pac-12 for at least a season. But you look at just like, how many times have you seen Dan Lanning's name listed as, oh, that's exactly who I would start my program with. That's exactly. And I don't even have a huge issue with that. I have an issue with, we just talk about him so differently than like Heupel, Sark, not really Sark, but Heupel, DeBoer, and several other coaches. DeBoer is like 3-0 against Dan Lanning. He beat him twice in the same season. And his record against Kirby, like in some of these other coaches that are right around in that same mix is pretty bad.
Do you think we have a good list of coaches in the SEC?
It's really interesting because one of the things I always do when I list the, I try to move out of the window or the frame so I could wipe my nose, but of course I've just did it right in the,
I mean, the top six, seven, eight maybe are solid, but the rest I'm not saying they're bad, but
yeah. Elko is too low. I think I would have Elko above Drinkwitz. I mean, hasn't Elko beaten the shit out of Drinkwitz 2 years in a row?
Hell yeah. But he's got better players.
Okay. That goes into it. So like, you know, Venables, I think that I would imagine he moved up a lot from what you had last year.
Oh yeah, I had him like 14 last year, I think.
Okay, well, yes, deserved. I would probably have Elko ahead of those two. I do think it's a good list. What's interesting is you're going to see this like new crop of coaches, because you have six new coaches that are here, right? You also mm-hmm. have Elko number one. Oh, so I think you're gonna have six new coaches that are coming into the conference, and like we have seen time and time again, this conference, you know, kind of chews up and spits out coaches no matter how good they are at some of these other spots. Like you look at what Brett Bielema is the one I always go to as my first example, because Bielema had so much success at Wisconsin, he could still be there. And it was guaranteed, hey, we're going to have an appearance in the Big Ten Championship every third year. We're going to go to the Rose Bowl every fourth or fifth year. They were a really good program. And he was like, I'm going to go to Arkansas and see if I – like, you had no one to compete with when you were at Wisconsin. That was when it was divisions, too. You were in the easier division. Like, it just made no sense to me. That's what they decided to do. And we saw how that worked out. He was fired on the field. There's a lot of good coaches that get chewed up and spit out in this league. I think the thing that's most interesting too is the coaches that are new that aren't like this is Will Stein's first head coaching gig. The other guys, they were really good at other places. And I think what you've seen early on is a few of them have done the things that they need to do most to win, which is hire good people around them. I have no I have no thoughts on John Summerall as a head coach. I live down here an hour away from New Orleans. I just don't watch Tulane football that much. I don't care. Him going out and getting
what about Troy?
No.
Okay.
Even less. So I think him going out and getting a guy like Buster Faulkner speaks volumes of like how good of a job he's doing as a head coach, getting the people around him to win. I think that what you saw with Golding going to get like to make sure he immediately went out and got the East Carolina guy who was one of the hot names in, not hot like Sam Levitt, but like one of the hotter names for like OCs around the country. And he went and got him. And then also was able to bring some of these guys into the fold during the current season they were having. Frank Wilson's a good pickup because of what he brings from a recruiting standpoint, right? Like there's a lot of coaches that are going to be new in their first year as a head coach in this conference or overall, but have already made some really, really strong moves that I think, I feel like I haven't seen in the past. Like I feel like a lot of coaches, especially in their first role, kind of rely on the people they like most of who they want to hire instead of doing the due diligence to make sure it's someone that works.
Hey, a very important question from Ronnie. Which coach would you most like to have a beer with on this list?
Kirby, hands down. Kiffin doesn't drink. I feel like he'd be annoying. keep it up here. Can't say Sark. Would never want to be in public with Brent Venables. I think in order, I would say Kirby Smart, then Pete Golding.
Yeah.
I'll buy the Uber. I love Pete Golding so much, man. He's fucking hysterical. Like him just like lining up in his press conference, he's like, you know, a lot of these guys don't give a fuck about any of these people. Whoever runs about the goddamn tunnel is going to be who, like, they don't care. They're here to play ball, and that's it. Did you see when they ran out of the tunnel what he did? So when they were in the whatever bowl game it was in Tempe, they come out of the tunnel, and he's everything he says is real. He's not saying any of this shit like Dan Lanning for clicks or whatever. It, like, they come running out of the tunnel, Mike, and they're running out onto the field. He fucking peels off immediately and just goes straight to the sideline and then stood there waiting. And it was like, this guy doesn't give a shit about anything but ball. Put the list back up. I would say Kirby, Pete. I think Eli Drinkwitz, if he wasn't being a dickhead, because he can be a pretty big dickhead. That's three. This is a fun game.
I bet Levy would be fun to drink with.
Jeff Levy?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. He probably has some good stories, too.
We'd have to bring some food, too, but yeah.
Yeah, that's an underrated one. I think...
Do you think he'd bring his father-in-law?
Who's his father-in-law?
Oh, you don't even know this?
No.
Briles. Art Briles.
I do not want to be a part of that. So, I would say those three.
How about Elko?
I'd rather go play... Elko would be up there, but I don't feel like Elko would be very fun. Like Elko just seems like he'd be very preoccupied.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my top three for sure. I think after that, I would say Heupel might be up there for me. I wouldn't mind asking Alex Golish what it was like going through the fucking gulag. Hey, man, what was it like watching Rocky IV growing up or on the wrong side, motherfucker? It's a joke. I love Alex Golish. He's great.
He's probably watching this. He follows. So
he's a big fan. Yeah.
Sure. Hey, last thing. Hey, I'm on an island here. I'm just kind of curious where you stand, because it's very popular right now to bash the SEC and say it's dead and yada yada yada. I think, and now call me crazy. Now they didn't get the job done, but like if Georgia was in the national championship right now, I don't think any of this talk is there, because it's all we're doing is like, you know, who is at the top, and everybody perceived that as Georgia going into the playoff, and they didn't hold up their end of the bargain, so now the SEC sucks. No, literally no one talks about Ohio State, who I heard all year, Chris, was that this is the best team in the country. They didn't win a damn playoff game. That's not a reflection on the Big Ten at all. I don't buy that. And the fact that, hell, the SEC got five in the playoff, and two of them were knocked off by SEC teams. I mean that doesn't seem to be discussed either.
Yeah, I'm a little bit preoccupied. There was one comment we have to touch on real quick. Maya World UGA, who seems to be very upset with anything I say, said, "How does it feel to be on the wrong side of Rocky Road, Marlon?" That's a funny statement. That's a funny statement. I will also remind you that you're here during a fucking workday watching me speak. So,
maybe he doesn't have a job.
Probably not. So I will push back on what you said about if Georgia's in it. If Georgia's in it, low cheese. If Georgia's in it, are we having a different conversation? I don't think that's true. I think this conversation is happening no matter what. And I think getting into the championship game would have been even more of a problem, because I think whoever gets in is going to get blown out by Indiana, for one. This is what I mean when I say that, like, I get so frustrated with talking about college football nowadays, because it's like we're not doing it in a way that is like constructive. Rarely are you seeing a majority of the stuff on social media be like, "Man, what a great game! I love you too, idiot." Damn it! I should have said
the sex wrong.
That happens a lot. for me. Tough on Maya. I guess Maya should have been the first clue. That was my own bad. That was Maya bad. Hey! So listen, I think that they got five teams in the playoff, right, Mike? Like they got five teams in.
Correct.
Did you hear any of that? Did you hear any of the conversation quell at all about, hey, maybe the SEC is still good because they had five teams in? No, what you heard was, why do they get five teams in? This is such bullshit. They get all the favoritism. They get all the biases, like all that. Keep in mind, in the same year, you had three of the top five teams were Big Ten teams, right? In the same, or a year before, you only had three SEC teams in, and we made room for over four teams that had a strength of schedule that was ranked 70th or 65th or worse, and also at least three, so 25% of the entire field that didn't have a single win over a ranked opponent all fucking year. So, like, none of those factual things have stopped any of the slander. And the most concerning part for me, and I'm not trying to sit here and have this argument once again, because I did it all fucking season and parts of last offseason, and it was exhausting. But, like, the worst part is, it's fine if fans do it. That's fine. But when you see media, when you see people like Nicole Auerbach, people like Tom Fornelli, people that like Brett McMurphy making jokes, and he's been kind of more fair than anybody. But like, I expected from Danny Cannell, what I didn't expect is like this widespread, like sweeping amount of national respected media firing off low-hanging fruit jokes that have no fact included in them just because they want to piss off SEC fans. Keep in mind, those are SEC fans that consume your fucking content, for one, because you're in the media, and also people that are going to like to you as a respected member of the media to say, hey, I'm unbiased. I'm a report. I'm going to report on what I'm seeing. But that is not ever more important anymore than making jokes about this conference. It's like everyone had something, but like, show us on the fucking doll, dude. Like what did the SEC do so badly to Tom Fornelli, to Danny Cannell, and to Nicole Auerbach that they have to go so far out of their way to become like, I'm just going to say it, like fucking MSNBC of delivering news about college football. Like, and I mean that, listen, there's inherent bias in a lot of things nowadays, but like, I don't go to watch only people talk about the SEC unless I want to hear about the SEC. Like, I love Paul Feinbaum to death. I'm not going to listen to Paul Feinbaum tell me about, hey, I think this team's really got a chance to win it all this year. He doesn't care about that. He's an entertainer. But people in the media, people that played the game, that still can't get out of their own way because them being funny and like pissing off half of their fans just because it gets a rise out of people on Twitter, that's somehow more important than just fucking talking about the game objectively and factually and in a way that includes everyone instead of having to, like, it's so fucking bad, man. It's so fucking bad that we can't even have basic fucking dialogue and conversations about what's real or not, because someone has to be pitted against each other. And the way I'm describing it, I feel is very, very accurate of how I watch the playoff be described, how I hear SEC bias talked about all the time. And everything I'm saying also sounds exactly like political discourse right now in the country. It's truly sad that we cannot have people that we trust in places to talk about the sport we love the most. And the biggest issue, Mike, is the last part I just said. Whoever's in charge of this sport, all I'm asking for the thousandth fucking time, please just care about the sport. I don't give a fuck about like having to have Tulane and JMU in. I don't give a fuck about the top 25 rankings. Like if you're going to fuck those up and then like do whatever you want, make them be later in the year, add 24 teams. But can we just fucking have something that we like love and care about, also cared about by the people running it, instead of trying to make a fucking dollar at every single turn and putting that ahead of anything else in the sport? It's sickening. It's sickening.
I agree.
My home 3 years, brother. But anyway.
Take your blood pressure.
No, it really does piss me off, man. There's no part of me that wants to be a Big J journalist at all, but I do expect that the people who carry themselves that way to do that job. And to listen to some of the way that people talk about the SEC in Tim Brando, like, dude, it's become a joke. And it's wild that this person is like, it's very clear he's very good at his job. He's like, he's been doing it for 50 fucking years. He's, and he still has hair. He's got great hair at like 74. Like, he's really good at his job of broadcasting. It's beyond clear to me that whenever the word Alabama is brought up, it triggers something in him that is like infuriating. And he talks about that team differently than anyone else. And then you talk about the same with the SEC, with others. And it's just frustrating, man. Indiana's the best team in college football this year. They're awesome. Like, they are fucking awesome. The Big Ten was better at the top than the SEC was this year. They were the better conference, in my opinion. That's fine. Let's move on about our day. And then, like, next year when we talk about stuff, let's not fucking argue about, well, the SEC had this many teams in the top 25. Why are you so hurt by that? That's so weird.
This sums it up well for Aaron. I have no idea what he's yapping about, but man, is he passionate.
Hell yeah, Aaron. Hell yeah, dog. And another thing about Gaza.
Hey, before we go, I want to shout out the great JR. He gifted another Cousin membership.
Cousin JR has done it again.
Thank you, JR. He gifted Sooner Dynasty. The dynasty coming to you. Are they a dynasty? Anything else before we hang up here?
No.
Any ramblings? And you want to do any lines or?
Smalley Frog.
All right, see ya.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.